couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the films Cyrano, Clean, The Legend of Vox Machina, The Ice Age Adventures of Buck Wild, and The Woman Across the Street from the House with the Girl in the Window. I'm also going to be talking about some news and the trailer park and the home cinema roundup featuring Kamen Rider 01. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
As has become customary with this section of the show, I wanted to talk a little bit about the box office from last weekend. And Spider-Man came back from behind and took the top spot again from Scream, which I predicted. I said if Scream drops about 60%, which it did, and that's normal for a horror movie, and especially in a horror movie anytime, but in January, they tend to plummet pretty quickly. And Spider-Man would hold decently, which it had been at about 30% every week. It would definitely be able to overtake that top spot again, which puts the web-slinger over $700 million. It's in the top couple movies ever made. It's still a juggernaut when it comes to box office. And when you look at Scream, I mean, $51 million is what it's ended the weekend with. And that's not bad. Don't get me wrong. That's not a bad number for this movie, but it compares to like the first three movies, and it's not even at that level. And those first three movies came out 20 to 25 years ago. The new movies in the lineup were Redeeming Love, which came in at number 4 with $3.5 million, a paltry take for a brand new movie. And then The King's Daughter did even worse. It didn't even crack $1 million. It didn't even crack $750,000. It did extremely poorly. In fact, it had the lowest per theater average in terms of how much it made for every screen that it was in for any of the movies in the top 10 and maybe even in the top 20. I mean, it had very, very low numbers. So this is telling us two things. First of all, what I've been saying for a while is holding true that the big movies like Spider-Man, something like that, that really has an oomph factor and a gotta see now factor to it, are going to do well. Even Sing 2, which is topping off at it'll be somewhere in the 130 some million range when it finally finishes its box office run. That's doing okay for itself, but these new movies, even Scream, it topped the box office last weekend, but it was short-lived. And, people are going to be able to watch this one on streaming, just a couple weeks, I'm pretty sure. So it's saying that, and it's also saying that people aren't going to the theaters as much. And, you know, because I think in general, I think you can say Americans as a whole have learned to mitigate whatever risks they want to with COVID. They're either going out not caring, or they are putting on masks and being careful where they go, but they're still going to movie theaters. But people just aren't going to movie theaters as much anymore. And that's partly a result of streaming and not the pandemic necessarily. Now, the next piece of news I wanted to hit, and this dovetails a bit into the box office, is the domestic release schedule has been shifted around quite a bit. In fact, we're running into one of these shifts with Cyrano, which I'm going to be covering this week, and that thing's bopped around the schedule. For a movie that is giving a huge, strong awards push, it is getting its release schedule all flopped all over the place, and that's not good for the movie. That's a dangerous thing to do because you want people to go see your movie. So there are a couple films that have been pushed around, like Everything Everywhere All at Once I talked about last week, that finally got a release date in April. It got bumped, I think, from March. And like Downton Abbey got moved about 2 months into the summer. Those I don't think are big deals. But it was funny because I made a joke about Mission Impossible. Would that even come out in 2022? And it wasn't going to happen because after I made that joke, Mission Impossible 7 got moved from 2022 in September to next summer. And then the Mission Impossible 8 moved from summer of 2023 to the summer of 2024. So Paramount Pictures is a little bit concerned. They're clearing away a lot of their 2022 schedule that seem to be the big tentpole releases. So, like I said, some of these movies shifting around and getting different release dates, this is not something that's showing that theaters are doing strong business right now. And that's really the takeaway from it. And I'm not saying that is a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that's how I'm reading the tea leaves. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is, oh dear, it's about a Madea homecoming, weren't they supposed to stop making these movies? But they did. They're continuing to make them. It's coming to Netflix next month, February 25th.
My baby is graduating.
I am so proud of you.
Thank you for letting me stay here.
Come here any time you want, day or night, long as you don't stay too long. You're leaving right after graduation, right, baby?
Wakanda forever.
Who is this?
Agnes Brown.
I'm a brown too.
No, you're more black.
Y'all hear about the break loot now.
There's the legal way, then there's the Madea.
To me, the most shocking thing in this trailer was not that Tyler Perry was bringing back Madea, which supposedly Madea was done. They said, we're not making any more Madea movies. Well, that didn't last long. Look, I've said before with Tyler Perry, I respect the heck out of him for developing product and finding an audience that has a huge fan base and a very strong fan base and capitalizing on that. And I think that's to be admired. And his career is the kind of career that any artist should aspire to. With that said, I think his stuff's garbage, and I'm not a big fan of the Madea stuff. I thought I could get into some of the Madea stuff, but it's just not funny. But the most shocking thing about this trailer, and you hear it in what I played there, you got the guy from Mrs. Brown's Boy showing up. That's what it's a sitcom where a man dresses in drag as a matron of this family, letting their kids stay with her and their kind of crazy things. But she shows up in this, and I'm like, oh, I think that's great that they're sort of cross-pollinating the unattractive men dressing up as older women and taking the thing. But I mean, it just blows my mind that this guy or in this character showed up in this movie. I get the connection, but that's the thing I'm most curious about in watching this is to see how Mrs. Brown fits into this whole thing. The next trailer I want to hit isn't much of a trailer, it's just a teaser, but it came out, it's also for a Netflix film, and it's coming out next December, and that is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story you may think you know, but you don't. No, really. You see, I, Sebastian J. Cricket, was there. As a matter of fact, I lived in the heart of the wooden boy.
You know, I love Guillermo del Toro's work. I thought that The Shape of Water was well deserving of the Oscar. I've really enjoyed a lot of what he's done. I liked Nightmare Alley. The original subject matter is a little bit worn, and I think that there are some mistakes in the marketing of Nightmare Alley. Beginning with the title, which is the original title, but you expect something to be a more, nightmarish, supernatural thing with a title like that. And I think that's what kind of, did that movie in a little bit. But I love his work and I love his dark tinge of humor and creepiness to the movies. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does with Pinocchio. Plus it's stop motion animation and I love stop motion animation. I love the stuff from Aardman. I love the stuff from Laika. And I can't wait to see what Guillermo del Toro has put together because he wants to bring out the artistry in work like that. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this one. That's the high on my anticipated list for next Christmas. And with that, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Legend of Vox Machina and the Ice Age Adventures of Buck Wild.
Because we can! Uh-oh. 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 Uh-oh.
Thank you.
back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some new content this week. The first one I want to talk about is a series which is on Prime Video, The Legend of Vox Machina. This animated series features a foul-mouthed and rude team of mercenaries who offer their services to the crown to rid the land of dangers.
I'm sorry, who the hell are you?
Who, Vox Machina?
Let's go! Come on, work! Stella's
here! You can't be seriously considering them for such a task.
Our reputation is less than stellar.
If killing for gold isn't getting us anywhere, maybe we try doing some good this time?
Nah. Boring.
Kill Vox Machina!
This is, I don't like to use the term adult animated, because that to me sounds almost pornographic. It's something beyond Fritz the Cat or something like that. This is R-rated animated content. It has swearing, it has sex, it has nudity, it has violence. Something along the lines of Invincible, if you remember that series on Prime Video. I talked about that, you know, a year or so ago. And I mean, it's different people who do it, and it's a very different concept, whereas Invincible was this modern superhero story. This one is sort of this medieval fantasy world. You know how like every story that seems to come out of the fantasy realm has a group of people, you know, like Lord of the Rings, you had elves and hobbits and wizards and dwarves all working together. And you got that with, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. There was a mage and then there was a dwarf and there was a wizard and there was a Valkyrie or whatever. And that's basically what this group of characters are in Vox Machina. They're a band of people who hire themselves out, and they're really just kind of a bunch of ne'er-do-wells in the story. They just kind of flop around from bar to bar, and they sometimes engage in stealing things, but everybody's got their different talents. They've got, like, this one character is a healer that she can heal. They have this big, strong, kind of giant creature that's very much like a Drax character in Guardians of the Galaxy. And you've got this somewhat of, you know, a scientific guy who uses almost steampunk level of technology, not full on dress or anything like that. But they're rude and crude, and it's not a kid's show. So don't, you know, by now people should realize that if just because it's animated does not mean it's for kids. That was one thing, you know, like maybe 20, 25 years ago, you had to say that. But now you shouldn't have to tell people, hey, you know, just because they're animated characters, don't let the kids watch it, because there's been enough of Family Guy and American Dad and Invincible and every other show that you should tread with caution. Read the ratings before these things. But The Legend of Vox Machina basically has this group that sort of stumbles into jobs for the nobles out there. And they're originally to just uncover, like, there's a monster in the lands, and they're trying to stop him. And, you know, they go on these multiple different quests, and it enriches the story as they go on, and there's some people from their backstory. And I got to say, one of the reasons I like this, and similar to what I liked about Invincible, is it plays with a very familiar trope. It plays into a type of story that we've seen many times before. In this one, it's the fantasy element. If you ever watched or played Dungeons and Dragons when you were a kid, that's completely what it leans into. And it at times it's iconoclastic, but at times it plays completely into that. It's more than just a rude version of it. Like, there's a series on Hulu called Crossing Swords, which is a little more rudimentarily animated. And I didn't like that one because that was not very great stories where they just cursed and did rude things. Whereas this one, these are the characters. They're hardwired into the story. They're written as obnoxious, foul-mouthed characters, and they don't pull their punches, and they don't try and sanitize it for an animated audience because it's not something that's for kids. And I kind of like that. You're allowed to tell stories. And I like the fact that finally American animation has evolved to the point where you can tell stories and not be relegated to Saturday morning cartoons. You know, Japan does this all the time. They have entire series that are fully aimed at adults and not for kids that are very well thought out and well plotted. And we're getting more of those now. And I think a lot of that's due to streaming, because it is allowing the content to be a little more experimental. And this is experimental in American entertainment. So Legend of Vox Machina, I think they're dropping 3 episodes a week, So the first three episodes dropped this week. I mean, if overall it seems good, it's promising. And then there's going to be three for the next month, three each week. So you can get, basically it's an hour of content because they're about 20 to 25 minutes each. But yeah, I'm going to have to say The Legend of Vox Machina kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another animated offering. This one is for kids, and that is The Ice Age Adventures of Buck Wild. The possums Crash and Eddie go off on their own to find the swashbuckling adventurer Buck Wild living under the Earth's surface in the Lost World fighting dangerous dinosaurs.
Oh no! Crash and Eddie went back to the Lost World!
And I thought I made bad choices.
Hello, boys! Buck Wild at your service.
Our hero!
What brings you two to my world?
We want to live a life of adventure, like you.
It's a bad time for a tropical vacation. Everyone, we face a grave threat.
Can you repeat that? I had a marshmallow in my ear.
I've always been fascinated with the Ice Age series because it's one of the most lucrative animated series out there, because I don't think they don't spend the money that like a Pixar movie usually does or a Disney animated film usually does in development and animation. And they just seem to get bigger and bigger box office numbers, at least globally, every time they release a new movie. Now, this one's interesting because this is after the Fox acquisition by Disney, and sort of like how they did the Diary of a Wimpy Kid movie, they're sort of staking a claim for the Ice Age territory into the Disney Plus service. And I think that's great. I like the fact that Disney is developing and making use of the properties that they had acquired along with all the other stuff from 20th Century Fox in that sale. The other thing that's nice about it is it definitely isn't just Disney-fied. It does not just take the Ice Age characters and make them very Disney, because Ice Age characters were always their own thing. And I don't feel like you're suddenly watching a Disney version of the Ice Age movies. Not that they were great quality to begin with, but it still feels like they're doing an Ice Age thing. Now, they take these two characters and they split them off, and they're just doing kind of like this one-off movie, but they bring back Simon Pegg to do the voice of Buck Wild, even though they don't have, like, they don't have John Leguizamo or Ray Romano or Dennis Leary doing the grown-up voices. They just have people basically impersonating them. But the Ice Age Adventures of Buck Wild it's a fun little one-off movie. You can tell the animation isn't as expensive as the full-release big-screen movies that they've been doing, and I expect to see that. That's not surprising considering how expensive it is to do animation. I think they're testing the waters to see whether it's worth doing a series on Disney Plus for this. Don't expect this to kill any sort of future Ice Age movie in the theaters, because these things do tons of money worldwide. So, I mean, it's a cute story. It's nice to see it be about these characters and not about Manny the Mammoth, because he's getting a little tired. And I mean, for the first two, three movies, that was fine, but I'm just getting tired of his character. I'm getting tired of the Sid the Sloth character. So it's nice to see these other annoying characters get their own movie, at least for the short amount of time they have. But I'm going to have to say The Ice Age Adventures of Buck Wild is good enough. I mean, it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Cyrano and Clean. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue to plow through the movie reviews and talk about Cyrano. And what's interesting, before I even play the trailer and talk a little bit about the movie, it's amazing how I got here doing Cyrano this week. Because, this movie has been around for a month and a half in terms of critics and analysis and award consideration. I was getting screeners for this thing probably around Thanksgiving. And this was given a very limited release. It was right around New Year's. And they do that a lot. That's just kind of how movies are, that they say, well, they need a run in the theater in New York or LA for like a week or two. And so they give what's called a qualifying run. And then they may release it later. Well, the plan was originally to do this very limited release of Cyrano and then drop it into theaters this week, which is the last week in January. But suddenly, a week or two ago, they said, oh, no, wait, no, we're going to move this. And they decided to push it into February. So now the release is February 25th or something like that. And I already had it on my slate to talk about this week. And I'm like, ah, the heck with it. It's their problem if they can't keep their own release date straight and stick to what they're going to say they're going to release it as. And this would have been a great time to release Cyrano because nothing else is going out wide in the theaters. Why not? But no, we're going to wait a little bit longer. I think they're waiting because, like I mentioned, the Critics' Choice Awards got pushed because of the Omicron variant. And I think you always want to be one of the last things people see or talk about. But if you hold it back too long, it can damage your chances. But I think they've held it back at this point that they don't want it to get lost before the nominations for Oscar comes out. So you can't see this in very many theaters right now, but you haven't been able to for weeks, and it's already been on the award slate, but I'm covering it now because I'm a rebel, Dottie. So anyways, in Cyrano, Joe Wright directs this musical adaptation of Cyrano de Bergerac about an unlikely suitor for a beautiful woman who lends his voice to another.
Pleasure to meet you, Cyrano de Bergerac.
You're a freak.
I have a confession to make. I am madly in love.
Perhaps he feels the same.
But I've never actually spoken to him.
Of your love?
I think.
A woman like Roxanne wants wit, romance, poetry. I don't know how to speak romantically.
I am a poet. My words upon your lips. I will make you romantic. Will you make me handsome?
First of all, I love Peter Dinklage as an actor, and I have been a fan of his, and I have stood up for him and respected him as an actor long before any of this, long before Game of Thrones, long before he was really being a glass ceiling breaker in making movies about a character that's not at his diminutive height, you know, that doesn't have to be. You know, a lot of times dwarfs in real life, they only have a chance to play in a movie like Snow White or Wizard of Oz. There's not very many opportunities for him. And I think that Peter Dinklage is fantastic as an actor. So it's great to see him doing something different. Now, this does play into his size because whereas the original Cyrano de Bergerac had a big nose, he had a facial, what would be called a facial deformity, even though it was just a big nose. I've never seen the original play. So I'm not completely familiar, but I think that it was the nose thing. And so they're making it because he's short, and that's his malady. That's what makes him apparently unappealing to the character of Roxanne. Now, this was adapted for the stage. It was a musical version of it, and I believe it was done specifically for Peter Dinklage and for Hayley Bennett to play Roxanne. So they reprise their roles in this big screen version of it. And Joe Wright is known for doing these lavish costume dramas. You know, he did like Pride and Prejudice and Atonement and movies like that. And even if it's something like The Darkest Hour, which was it was a period piece, but it wasn't a lavish costume drama. He still gets very much into the image and the look of stuff. So you have that lavish look that Joe Wright does put into his work. And you're talking about late 19th century France, where there was a lot of pomp and circumstance and not a whole lot of bathing. So people would just cover themselves up more, and they would wear heavier clothes and more powder and more wigs and more makeup. And that's kind of how they used their hygiene back then. So they play into that. Now, Peter Dinklage is fantastic in this movie. He really is. He does a great job, and he has a beautiful voice. You don't really realize he's a good singer, but he's good in this. Hayley Bennett's a little bit, anybody could have played this role. I mean, Hayley Bennett, nothing wrong with how she plays it. She's just nothing special in this movie, aside from the fact that she's banging the director. The music is, and that's usually what defines a musical, is the music. The music, it's a hit or miss. There are some songs that are great. There's a really great song bridging the second to third act that's just, it's haunting and beautiful, but that's the highlight of it. The rest of the songs kind of are forgettable for me. See, here's the two problems with this one. On one, it's a musical, and so if you're not a huge fan and don't love the music, it can be a little bit of a slag to get through. And the other thing is this story is, 120-some years old? So there's parts and elements of the story that they just don't play well in today's world. And I know it's an old play, and I know that this is the way it is. It's sort of like Romeo and Juliet. When you watch Romeo and Juliet, he falls in love with her at first sight. He's just like, oh, I love her immediately. And I talked about the whole love at first sight thing last week when I was talking about redeeming love. And so they play into that, but that was much more romantic back in the 19th century in France. But I don't fault the movie for it because there's only so many changes you can make. You have to play the original story. So I can forgive that. But you know, so this is overall a good movie and it's worth seeing, but it's not as strong as Peter Dinklage's performances. I mean, he's the reason to see the movie. So I'm going to have to say Cyrano kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and talk about the movie Clean. Adrian Brody stars as a tortured garbage collector who struggles to make amends for his past by protecting an innocent girl in his neighborhood.
I'm still looking for answers. I just don't know the questions anymore. I've got blood on my hands. No matter how hard I try, I can't wash away the past.
Most guys I sponsor, they got a hard time doing work. But you got a different sort of malady. Yeah, it ain't the work, it's the letting go. You find a way to make peace with it, or it makes war with you.
There's a whole cottage industry of the grumpy, old, troubled guy who comes back to save somebody. I mean, it was pioneered by Liam Neeson in pretty much every movie he's made since, like, 2008. But it's also been played with stuff like the John Wick movies, or more recently, you had the movie Nobody with Bob Odenkirk in it. This one's a little more heavy-handed with him trying to make amends. He's this tortured soul, and you get this narration that never stops, and it just keeps talking. And narration is tricky in movies because it's a crutch. Narration really needs to have a reason, and I think they overdo it with this one. They just have him going, oh, I'm brooding, I'm upset, I've got this tortured past, I'm tortured. It keeps going on, and it's torture to listen to that for a while. But eventually, and it takes a while to get there, but eventually you know he's going to collide with this mob boss and his son because the story's being set up that way. You've got this guy's story that Adrian Brody plays, and then they're, for some reason, following around this mob boss and his son. We're like, well, they're going to collide at some point. When they finally collide and he has to bring down fury on these people, that's when it gets good. But that stuff doesn't happen until like an hour into the movie. The first hour of the film is all set up and brooding and him having nightmares and him worrying about things and telling people he's brooding and telling us that he's brooding because he's narrating more and having bad dream sequences. So there's a lot of cliche stuff. I mean, this is one of those stories that probably could have been about 45 minutes, but there's no market for a 45-minute movie. So they had to stretch this thing out to be, you know, a good hour and a half. But when they finally get to the butt kicking, and that stuff's really interesting. It becomes an action film. It's not as at the level of John Wick, and it's not even at the level of Nobody. Whereas Nobody, when he finally goes crazy, he really goes crazy in Nobody. But that's what you want. That's the catharsis of a movie like this. And you get to it. It just takes some time to get there. And so because it finally delivers on what it's promising, I am going to say it kind of rocks, but you got to get through a lot before you get to a little.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Woman in the House Across the Street from the Girl in the Window and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Kamen Rider 01. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and let's continue on with the new content and talk about the new series on Netflix. It's a mouthful, so let's get ready for it. It is The Woman in the House Across the Street from the Girl in the Window. Kristen Bell stars in this parody of the modern domestic thriller about a woman who thinks she sees a murder take place across the street.
I saw.
They said you saw a murder.
I'm not crazy.
Mom's gotta believe me.
And she has a serious drinking problem.
No.
Okay.
Well, if they won't be the detectives, then I will.
The woman across the lake. This book could make your imagination run wild.
Wherever you go, people end up dead.
What
are they up to?
This is something that you kind of have to know what it is before you start watching it, because you can get very confused. This is, at its heart, it's a parody. It's a parody of movies like The Woman in the Window or The Girl on the Train, those kind of domestic thrillers that are essentially a person watching stuff happen from their house and, you know, misinterpreting stuff. And it usually takes place in like a desperate housewife sort of idyllic suburban community. And there's a whole rash of not just movies, but books of like this stuff. And they all have woman or girl in the title of the story. And they make fun of it as well in the movie itself, because she's reading a book, the books like The Woman at the Lake, and another book she's reading, The Woman on the Cruise, or something like that. It's a parody, but it's also a straightforward attempt to live in this genre. It's got Will Ferrell behind it, and it's directed by Michael Lehman. And Michael Lehman has done some more serious stuff, but Michael Lehman is also known for doing some pretty biting satire. I mean, one of the greatest movies ever made was Heathers, and he directed that movie, which was a scathing satire of popularity and suicide and a lot of the problems hitting teens in the 80s. And it was one of my favorite movies of all time, and it still is. And it's a lot of the actors are humor actors as well. I mean, especially some of the supporting cast. You see people show, like Jim Rash shows up at one point, and he's the guy who played the dean in Community. And so a lot of the supporting characters are comedic actors, but they're playing very, very straight drama. And in a lot of ways, it reminds me of that time that Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig got together and made a Lifetime original movie about a guy who has an affair with and then is stalked by the babysitter. And I never saw it, and unfortunately I never did, but it was just one of those things that came out of nowhere, and apparently they made this movie, and they made the movie straight. They weren't winking and nodding at the audience. One of the things when you do parodies and when you do spoofs, a lot of times there's winks and the nods of the audience. I mean, sometimes literally breaking the fourth wall and doing it, but other times it's so absurd or so crazy. I mean, like, so we talked several weeks ago about Blazing Saddles, which is a parody and a satire of Westerns. And it totally busts apart the Western mythos, but I mean, it does so in a overt, knee-slapping comedic way. The way they make this show is it exists in its genre. It actually is a standalone story that works. But there are elements to it that are so absurd, that are so over the top. They're very, very funny, but they don't laugh at their own jokes. And that's what makes this work. That's what also makes this very confusing. Because they throw in these elements that you just roll your eyes at. And you're like, are you kidding me? That is ridiculous. There's no way this could happen. But then you realize that's part of the joke. And I think these stories, the stuff that this Will Ferrell brand of humor, I think he was the kind of kid when he was younger and when you were at home alone, when you were sick from school or you had a day off or a snow day, you stayed at home and you watched soap operas, and you watched TV movies, and you watched crappy television shows. And that's just kind of the tropes that they threw in there. And you accepted them because that was your only option. When, you know, like when I was a kid, I had four channels, and one of them was PBS. I mean, in a lot of ways, this is put together like a Hitchcockian thriller, deliberately not nearly as smart as a Hitchcock movie. And I'm not saying that as an insult. But, I mean, Kristen Bell plays this character, and she does it 100% straight. I mean, the background of the story is her daughter had been murdered. And so she has these moments of actual acting. I mean, she's not being overly melodramatic, and she's not overacting. She's literally in the moment acting as she would in a drama, knowing that it's silly, but knowing if she acts like it's silly, it's not going to be taken the right way. So there's a brilliance to The Woman in the House Across the Street from The Girl in the Window because of the level of satire and the fact that it refuses to let you know that it's in on its own joke. You only get to know that it's in on its own joke from contextual clues. But they're really trying to deliver a straight-up domestic thriller knowing full well that it's silly and stupid. So in a way, it exists and it works as a domestic thriller, but it also works as a parody of itself. And that's what I find so fun about this movie. Because every time you start, you find yourself getting sucked in, and then something silly happens, you're like, oh, wait, oh yeah, this is a spoof, isn't it? And that makes no sense, but okay, I'll go with it. So I had a lot of fun with this, but it is not going to be for everybody. I guarantee you, this is the thing everyone's going to be talking about this weekend and through this week. If like, oh, have you watched this show? Because you know how these things get buzzworthy? That's what's going to happen. I'm going to have to say that The Woman in the House Across the Street from the Girl in the Window totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on a Japanese product. It's called Kamen Rider 01. This is new from Shout Factory. This Japanese series follows a group of warriors who face off against evil minions of an artificial intelligence.
Jump!
A jump to the sky turns to a rider kick.
The immediate reaction when you watch something like this, and you can hear in the trailer, it's just a bunch of music and fighting. But if you watch something like this, you immediately start thinking that this is like the Power Rangers. And it is. In a lot of ways, it is. Americans have superhero movies. And a lot of people, they don't think superhero movies really existed before 2008. Because that's when The Dark Knight came out, and that's when Marvel Studios started doing Iron Man. But superhero movies have been around since superheroes have, since film. I mean, you can go back and watch Flash Gordon, and that's essentially a superhero character from the old serials. And you can go back and watch Rocky Jones in the 40s in the serials, and even Superman and Batman. And so the super characters are nothing new, but that's a very American thing. In Japan, they have a lot of these costume heroes, and this is their costume heroes, Power Rangers. They have this show. They have Ultraman. They have a lot of things where you got people fighting in these outfits. That's sort of a trope. And so this is another one, and it's made, I'm assuming it's made for kids. It certainly plays that way. And it plays that way with overt, almost comical overacting that you get with some of the characters in a series like this. But in essence, it's a high energy series where, you know, they're fighting in these brightly colored costumes and flying in the air and screaming and yelling and going over the top. And it has the whole series in here. I think there's like four seasons. And then there's they're five episodes, five special episodes. So they got those five episodes and they got the movie that they made on this one. So it's a full box set. It's something like eight discs on it. The biggest drawback I had with this one, and which was a problem for me, is it's only in Japanese. Now, I mean, it has English subtitles, which is great, but they do not have a dubbed option. I mean, it's fun. It's high energy. You know, it certainly is a newer version of what you would have had with the Power Rangers. Have become kind of sanitized and Americanized a little bit too much. Maybe that's why they haven't done the English dub for this one, because they don't want it to become too mainstreamed and too Americanized, because then it loses its original essence. But it is, it's a fun little series. It's definitely worth checking out. It's available from Shout Factory, box set, Kamen Rider 01, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available this week for new stuff, we've only got Censor, which is about a woman who starts to try and look into a murder in her family's past based on a video nasty that she's censoring for the British board. Then there's a whole bunch of stuff from Vintage. We've got The Piano, the Criterion Collection, Dick Johnson is Dead, the Criterion Collection, Clockstoppers, Mallrats, Dreamer, Bad News Bears, the original, Basket Case, Surf's Up, The Brain Eaters featuring Leonard Nimoy, and then 4K versions of Dead Heat and The Punisher. And then for the fans of TV, you've got Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, the complete series, just in time before they do the movie that's coming to Disney Plus later this year. And that's it. I gotta go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Moonfall and Jackass Forever. That's not about my career. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.